Good afternoon and welcome to the Buckmaster Show from the Green Things Socolo Village studio. It's Monday, August 30th. I'm Dan Scheer, editor of the Green Valley News and the Sahuarita Sun. Bill's taken a well-deserved break along the beautiful central California coast with his wife, Anne. He shared on his Facebook page that they honeymooned there all those years ago, so I'm sure it's going to be a great trip with some wonderful memories. The show comes to you live Monday through Friday, noon to 1, or you can access all the past shows or the live stream at buckmastershow.com. We start off the week talking to our political experts during the Monday political face-off. Today, we'll welcome Aaron Rottenstein and Nolan Reedhead. After the break at 12:30, we're going to be talking to Matthew Schwartz. He's a longtime investigative reporter who retired last year after more than 40 years on the air. He has a book out, and we're going to be talking about that. Please join us. If you have a question or comment, you can reach us at 790-2040. That's the Buckmaster Show live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. The Monday Political Face-Off is presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, family-owned and run since 1985. Moe's specializes in custom-framed mirrors, art for your walls, picture framing and hanging services and systems. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing at Fort Lowell and Dodge and at moesgallery.com, and you can find them on Facebook. We are joined by our commentators, Aaron Rottenstein and Nolan Reedhead. It's good to see you both. I hope you had a great weekend.
I did. It was a great weekend. Boy, it's nice to see everything greening up throughout the desert and all the rain, but it's good to be with you, Dan and Aaron.
And with the rain comes moths and bugs.
That's so true.
Yeah, turn the light on at night at home and then open up the curtains and you just see thousands of them.
Yeah, we went up to Mount Lemmon on Saturday and hiked with the kids, and it was, between that and then the rain in the evening, it was the first day we spent in the 70s in a long, long time.
Oh, boy, that sounds... really nice. I travel a little bit for work, and actually my next trip is in about 2 weeks up to Alaska. So I have a heavy jacket and I'm told I'm going to need it. So we'll see how that goes. We had a lot of topics to cover, a lot happening over the weekend. I want to note, we were listening to a little bit of it in the news. Our newspaper chain has a paper just west of New Orleans, and so we've been following the hurricane and how it's been affecting them. And I saw on their website today that their lead story was, your Monday trash pickup is going to be delayed till Tuesday. So I'm thinking, okay, maybe they weren't hit so bad. They're probably in good shape out there. But we know that New Orleans is having a rough situation here. So our thoughts are with them. We also had some news this morning out of the European Union. It's regarding COVID. They recommended today that Americans should be banned from non-essential travel to its member states after a rise in the COVID-19 cases in the United States. It's just a recommendation. The nations have to act on that independently, and we will see how that goes down. But it speaks to the fact that we are now, I think, in the entire country. I was checking Pima County, then the state, and then the entire nation is in a high community spread situation right now. Locally in Pima County, hospitalizations are down, but cases are up. And what we've been all talking about, I was at a school board meeting just last week in Sahuarita about this, are mask mandates on campuses. And Nolan, what's the objection to mandating masks in schools?
Well, a couple of things. Number one, it's against the science that's out there, and I'll explain that. But also it's against parental rights as required by statute. And so by Arizona law, parents are the ones who have the right to make decisions for their children regarding their health care, not a governing school board, not a city council, not a Pima County Health Department. It's the parents that have the right to make those decisions. And you can't give a vaccine to a child. You can't give a shot or some other case to a child. You have to get consent. And so masks should be, it should be the parents' choice. And so what we're seeing here is we're seeing children, the least likely group to get COVID, the least likely group to spread COVID. They are mandated to have masks. And so like in a restaurant, you can go into a restaurant if you're 75, 80, 90 years old, have pre-existing conditions, you can go into a restaurant, sit down at a table, take off your mask, but children cannot do so in school sitting at their own desks. So the science is not there, parental consent is not there, and it's just not necessary. On the flip side of that, you're seeing a lot of detriments with COVID to the children. You're seeing a lot more, I think it was 14 suicides, no deaths, fortunately, of COVID-19 in Pima County. And that's fortunate. It's just not affecting the children. And so school boards should take heed of that. They should listen to parents. I was at a school board meeting myself, Amphi School District, and one parent came up and said that, you know, he wants to protect his child, his five-year-old, with a mask. You know, that's perfectly fine. Let that parent make that decision for that five-year-old. But I have a senior in high school. He had to play basketball with a mask on. That's not good for him. It's not good for the kids. And so we're seeing that by the data.
Aaron, you buying this?
No. My kids are 6 and 4. This is my first, my son, his 6-year-old's first year. He's in first grade. 3 classrooms in his school have already been shut down, some for a couple of weeks. He was sitting next to a kid that was unvaccinated and coughing the first week of school before we had a mask mandate. He woke up on the next Tuesday with a cough. We took him to his pediatrician. They won't let you in the building. They keep you in the parking lot. The parking lot was full. They take the rapid test. They go inside. If you're not positive with COVID, they come out in their surgical mask and they bring you into the exam room and try to figure out what's going on with you. If you are positive with COVID, they come out with this, you know, makeshift hazmat suit and a bucket labeled COVID. And as they're walking to the car, the parents and the kids start crying. This is not about parental rights. We don't let kids go to school with guns just because their parents might want them to. We don't let kids go to school with cigarettes just because their parents might be comfortable with that. This is a public health emergency. And the idea that the governor of this state is in competition with governors in other states who are seeing just a catastrophic increase in COVID cases and COVID deaths right now is deplorable.
Nolan, is there some wisdom in suspending some rights, as you put it, for the greater good? Or do you believe the science just doesn't back it up? It's just not necessary.
It's not necessary. I mean, you, going through those scare tactics that children will not, or parents will not send their kids with a gun, that's just not happening. So let's not talk about that. In Amphi School District, 0.2% of all employees have got COVID. 0.4% of all employees plus students had COVID. 0.4%. But you're seeing a lot of the detriments outweigh the benefits. And so you go with the benefits to the children. If we're talking about children, adults can make their own decision. But if you're talking about children, it is the parents that have the right to make their decisions for their children, not a governing board. So you're seeing probably 80% of the students went to school without masks. So parents spoke. There was no outrageous uptick in the cases, and you're also seeing that in Catalina Foothills.
Yeah, so 0.13%. This is a perfect example of why we need local rule, because in my kid's district, it was about 85% of the kids that were wearing masks, and every teacher except one that I can think of. We just saw the article of the school in California where one teacher in one period of one day decided not to wear a mask, and 15 of the 30 kids in that school setting got sick. My wife works in the school. She works with special ed kids. She's a physical therapist. The district doesn't matter, but of the 12 kids on her schedule last Thursday, 3 of them were in school. Now, not all of them had COVID. Many of them were exposed to COVID, but when we talk about continuity in school, when we talk about making sure that school is something that's valuable for kids, protecting their mental health, this isn't cutting it. And the only way we're going to get there is by making sure that people are safe and in classrooms as long as possible. And masks are the easiest way to do that.
Yeah, I would disagree. You look at tracing. My wife, who's a nurse at one of the schools here, they have a kid that comes in with COVID. They have to go out and look for kids that have been within 3 to 6 feet of the child. They have to send those kids who have no signs whatsoever. If they've been vaccinated, they can go back to school. If they haven't been vaccinated, they have to go home and stay home for 10 days. And they lose opportunities to play sports, to do other things. And if they have a COVID test within 5 days, then they can come back. You talk about they can't go online. They don't learn well online. So they lose out of learning opportunities. These masks do not work. We're seeing an uptick in anxiety, depression, suicides. It is not good for the kids.
Doug Ducey put a mask mandate into the prisons. He signed it. We care more about prisoners' health than we do about our kids.
Those are adults. Different demographics.
We get to control adults, but not make recommendations for kids. That's preposterous. We tell kids they need to be vaccinated against everything. But and I'm not even talking about vaccines right now, but you bring that card to your school when you register them for classes. Every single vaccine, and we're not talking about vaccines. We're talking about masks. Schools have dress codes. Kids don't get to decide what they wear on campus. Why can't masks be part of that?
Clothing do not affect your breathing, nor your anxiety, nor your depression. We're seeing the detriments of children, and we're going to see this for years to come.
If your kid's depressed because of their mask, then let's go parent responsibility. Get them some help.
Yeah. But if the masks work, you have your child wear the mask.
You know that that's not the way that this works. It's protecting everybody else by wearing a mask. You're not protecting yourself. You're protecting the rest of the class.
The issue, a lot of the data is they say masks. The problem is these cloth and cotton masks that all the kids wear. They do not work.
We've got funding for schools. We've gotten it through the COVID bills.
That's false. It doesn't work through the school system.
Let's pay for better masks instead of bribing schools to ignore health policy.
Aaron, we on Wednesday in the Sahuadita Unified School District, we had 19 cases of COVID. The district has about 6,000 students. Five of those cases were in people 12 and under, which, of course, they cannot be vaccinated. Do you find those numbers to be alarming?
Yes, because when you look at those 19 kids, if there's a second in any one of those classrooms, and I'm pretty sure that there was, that classroom gets closed for at least 2 weeks. This is about continuity in the schools. You're right. It's very hard for kids to learn online. They are having to do it because we're not keeping them safe.
Okay, we are with Aaron Rottenstein and Nolan Rehead on the Monday Political Face-Off. You're listening to the Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Things Socolow Village studio. And our live line is made possible by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. This is a good time to remind you that this portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. You can find Mona's on the northeastern corner of Swan and Sunrise. Mona's is open for breakfast and lunch. Treat yourself to their unmatched pastries, including the famous Danish Kringle that Bill loves to talk about. Mona'sDanishBakery.com or BuckmasterShow.com, and you'll find a link to Mona's Danish Bakery. We'll be right back.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
The Regional Transportation Authority celebrates 15 years of project delivery to the Greater Tucson region. As promised, the RTA has delivered nearly 900 projects from its 20-year 2006 voter-approved regional transportation plan, which is funded by a half-cent RTA tax. The RTA is committed to deliver the remaining plan projects. Learn more about the RTA's economic benefits at rtamobility.com.
Why is mining so important? It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
MedCare to You is a new Tucson-based concierge telemedicine urgent care, specializing in caring for our patients in the comfort of your location. We deliver your prescriptions and even provide in-person visits with our dedicated staff. It's convenient, quick, private, and your personal information is always protected. Find out more at MedCareToYouAZ.com.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery in Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back to the Monday Political Face-Off, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing at Fort Lowell and Dodge and at moesgallery.com and on Facebook. I'm Dan Scheer, editor of the Green Valley News and the Sahuarita Sun, sitting in for Bill. You've joined us in the middle of the Monday Political Face-Off with Aaron Rottenstein and Nolan Reedhead. We're going to move on to the budget. I was looking at the, the national debt, which is nearing, $29 trillion, which is just this incredible amount of money. The House recently passed a $3.5 trillion budget resolution. Speaker Nancy Pelosi said, "Our budget should be a reflection of our national values." Aaron, isn't a national value not to spend ourselves into oblivion?
You know, it's a great question, and I think the best way to answer that is to kind of go through the history of the debt. Ronald Reagan raised the debt by $1.6 trillion. It was the first time a president had ever raised the debt by more than $1 trillion. George H.W. Bush raised it by another trillion. Bill Clinton had about a $68 billion surplus when he was done. George W. Bush raised it by $3.5 trillion. Both Barack Obama and Donald Trump raised it by about $6.5 trillion, the difference being Barack Obama was in office for 8 years, and Donald Trump was in for four. There's no victim in Washington to deficits raising. In a perfect world, we would have, you know, zero debt, zero deficits. However, the $3.5 trillion budget that just got passed is exactly what Joe Biden ran on. It's exactly what he told the voters he was going to do, whether it's paid childcare, which is going to be one of the best job creation programs in the country, not just in terms of practitioners, but getting people back to work that otherwise have to make sacrifices in order to make sure that their family is safe. The child tax credit is benefiting 66 million children and their families. It's been going on for 2 months now, and it's already eradicated half of our country's children in poverty. These are exactly the kind of programs we need to build back our economy even better than it was before COVID.
Nolan, to add to that, do we need some of these real costly pet projects that we've seen, universal preschool, free community college, free family leave, federal support for childcare, elder care, all good things, but is now really the time to be spending like that?
Absolutely not. The national spending in Washington in 2020 was about $6.5 trillion, whereas the national revenue was about half of that. And so the problem is these are not national values. These are Washington, D.C. spending pet projects. The problem is somebody has to pay for these, and there is no mechanism for the spending built into this. And so that's going to be the problem. What's going to happen is you're going to see taxes raised on the middle class. You're going to see taxes raised on everybody, small businesses. This is not the time to give free stuff out to everyone. And the pet projects, the changes to climate change, the free this, free that. You know, if you want to go to college, you pay for it. I paid for my own college. My wife paid for her own college. You have that responsibility. If you're going to pay for that, you're going to take that opportunity. You pay for it. You can work through it. And the problem is that we as a country do not have the money to spend it. Businesses don't act this way. Families don't act this way in their own individual and family budgets. Our country should not be acting this way. We don't have the money to do it. We need to pay for it through our own measures, not increase taxes. And that's exactly what's going to happen on the spending for all Americans.
Now, Aaron, the Democrats say this is actually going to be paid for through tax increases on high earners and companies. You think that's going to happen?
Yeah. So, you know, and you don't even need to read the whole bill on this. You can read the two-pager. Written in this bill is a promise that taxes aren't going to be raised on anyone making under $400,000 a year. What we're doing above that is really simple. We're going back to the tax rates we had 3 years ago before the Trump tax plan got pushed through. That tax plan didn't do anything for middle-class families. The tax cut that working families received in that was about a cup of coffee a week, about $80 a year. That's not going to be a huge dent for those folks. Where it is doing stuff is closing loopholes for some of the biggest companies and wealthiest people in America. Now, let's go back here, because one of the most inspiring and hopeful things for me is I never hear Republicans talk about debt or deficit unless they're pretty confident Democrats are going to be in control for a while. So that's that's wonderful, and it's music to my ears. But if you believe that one party over the other has a unique unique plan to fix this, then I have terrible news about the existence of Santa Claus.
No, well, I agree. Both parties have a spending problem. It's not a revenue problem. Both parties have a spending problem. They need to stop it. That's the problem right there. And like I say, Nancy Pelosi says these are national values. No, this is a Washington, D.C. These are pet projects. These are slogans. This is not going to benefit. And by the way, the Trump tax cuts did help middle class. They helped in their payroll taxes. They helped small businesses. They helped individuals. Whereas this is going to raise taxes. So it's not going to help middle class. It's going to kill businesses, especially during a pandemic, where we're just getting back. We're just getting back to going, and all of a sudden you're going to get creamed with his taxes. And also you're going to see a wealth tax. You're going to see a transfer tax from estate taxes. That's what I deal with a living. Those farmers, those ranchers, those individuals who have land and real property, they're going to get creamed with these wealth and estate taxes to transfer the properties to their children. That's just unacceptable. That's a double tax. And these companies are going to get, so to say that we're just going to pay for it through the, there's too much revenue here. Too much spending to pay for just the wealthy and the rich.
Aaron, let me come back to you with this question again, because we're hearing words like inflation and somewhat of an unsure economy, at least over the next year. Again, is it the time to be spending money on some of these programs that when things look shaky a little?
That's absolutely the time to spend money on this. We've seen what austerity does, not just in our country, but in others, especially when the economy is on shaky ground. This is exactly the time. I said before, this is going to get people back to work that otherwise wouldn't. Included in this is, 6 weeks of paid family leave. That doesn't exist right now. When you pick up a puppy from a breeder, they don't let that puppy go to your house until 8 weeks after they're born. This bill doesn't even give families 8 weeks after birth to get back to work. We need a lot more than this, frankly, but it's a heck of a start.
The January 6th attack, insurrection, tourist trip, however you want to look at it, it's been described as all those things. We do have a committee that has been examining those events, and right now they are planning to ask some telecommunications companies to retain phone and text records as they move forward with their investigation. We know that several lawmakers spoke with President Trump on that day. Aaron, what do you make of all this?
It's a really important first step in investigating this like the terrorist operation that it was. We've already seen some benefits from it, knowing that those phone and text records were coming out. Jim Jordan this weekend started to get a heck of a lot more detailed in terms of his communication with Donald Trump on the 6th, where he had been dodging that question for several weeks now. I'm thrilled to know that we're going to start to get to the bottom of this, not just in terms of who was organizing January 6th and their members of Congress and our Arizona delegation that have been implicated in that, but also what's been going on since the November election in terms of the Trump administration, the pressure they put on the Justice Department, the pressure they put on the Defense Department, and the brave work that some folks in those two departments did to make sure that our election and Joe Biden's victory were upheld.
But you wish we were all talking about this a little bit more, and you think it's kind of getting lost in the news cycle here?
I do. This is, in my lifetime, the single most impactful attack on American democracy. And, it doesn't seem like anyone's learned a lesson from this. Fox News folks, other right-wing folks, even members of Congress and the Senate praising what's going on in Hungary right now. We don't agree on a lot in this country, but up until just a few months ago, we all agreed that elections are sacrosanct and that they have consequences. And it seems like certain people in certain parties are starting to deviate from that.
Nolan, is this committee so partisan that we know what the result will be, that half the country is going to support the conclusions and the other half is just going to dismiss them? Is this just, are we wasting our time here with this?
Well, we are, and I totally disavow and totally think it was wrong for any breach of our Capitol, any of our political bill or public buildings, federal buildings. But the problem is, this is so political by Nancy Pelosi and her crew. You looked and see what happened throughout the summer. You had the federal building in Portland just be ransacked and destroyed. You see so many other political buildings, BLM. The Democrats were fostering that. They were even encouraging that. Kamala Harris even said the same thing. So the problem is, this is purely political. You have three of the Democrat individuals that were on the Trump impeachment commission. They are on this crew. You have two other Republicans who were voted to impeach President Trump. They're on this crew. And Nancy Pelosi disavowed Representative Jordan and Banks to be on that. So it's going to be fully partisan. In addition, the subpoenas that they're allegedly issuing are completely illegal. And so that's the problem. It's illegal. It's just simply political, simply partisan, and it's not going to get anywhere.
Okay, well, we could easily go on for another half hour, but that's going to have to wrap up the Monday Political Face-Off presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, meeting all your custom framing needs and more since 1985. That's Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing at Fort Lowell and Dodge and at moesgallery.com and on Facebook. My thanks to Aaron and Nolan. Make it a great week, you two.
Great to be with you. Take care.
This is the Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Things Socolow Village Studio. And when we return, you are invited to join us on the live line, made possible by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. That's 790-2040. We're going to be right back with investigative reporter Matthew Schwartz.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
Have you ever imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
You're listening to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Dan Scheer, sitting in for Bill, who's enjoying a wonderful vacation, we hope, along the Central California coast with his wife, and check out their updates with lots of photos on his Facebook page. Our friends over in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, would also like to host you at their awesome vacation spot. I actually just talked to a friend who recently returned from there and absolutely loved it. Just 3 hours east of Tucson, there is so much to do in Silver City and Grant County, including hiking in the Gila National Wilderness and visiting the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. For a complete listing of the many things to do and great places to stay, visit southwestnewmexico.org. We now welcome Matthew Schwartz, a name a lot of you might remember from KVOA Channel 4 here in Tucson. Welcome, Matthew.
Thanks for having me.
You are off the air for about a year now, right?
I retired last June, yes. And it wasn't because of the book. It's just that I thought after 44 years, I did all I could do, and it was time for new adventures.
Okay, and the book came out about a month earlier, and the book is titled Confessions of an Investigative Reporter, and I have read it. Why'd you write it?
You know, it was a bucket list thing to write a book.
Mm-hmm.
And I started taking notes for it in the 90s when people started coming up to me, viewers and friends and family, and say, what's the real deal on that bad guy? Or what really did you want to say on the air? So, you know, the subtitle was going to be Stories I Couldn't Tell on TV. So I really wrote it as a bucket list thing, not to be a bestseller. So I was shocked when it hit number one on Amazon. And not to make money, just something I wanted to do, kind of leave a legacy for my kids and family. And I've been pleasantly surprised at how much people are enjoying it.
It's a very readable book, I'll say that. It's very conversational, and you just kind of zip through it. And a couple of times there, you mentioned that it's so hard in TV news because there's just not enough time to tell the story. So you can tell that you are trained to tell a story very quickly. Give us a quick recap of your career, where it's taken you.
Well, I started in New York City at All News Radio, WCBS 880 AM, still a great station. And then I decided, and on the advice of some people in the business, to try TV. Local news was really burgeoning at that time. And I did the minor leagues of TV, Utica, New York, Richmond, Virginia, two stations there, Cleveland, Ohio, 2 years at each of those stops, those markets. The dream was, the goal was to get on TV in New York City. I grew up in New Jersey. And by the time I was 30, and my first day on TV at WOR, Channel 9 in New York, was my 30th birthday. Spent 20 years there.
Very good. And so you say you did 2 years in Cleveland, and I was really taken aback because your career started in the 80s. But in Cleveland for 2 years, you didn't go by Matthew Schwartz.
You know, my father was a musician for a while before he entered the business world. And due to anti-Semitism, he used the name Shaw, the Mel Shaw Trio. S-H-A-W. So I always liked the sound of Matthew Shaw. I proposed this to my news director when I started in Cleveland. He said, sure. And then when I got hired in New York, I said, you know what? Ethnicity is probably a good thing there. I had so many friends that knew me from high school and whatnot. I said, you know what? I'm going to go with my real name. And I did. So it's just those 2 years in Cleveland. I went by Shaw.
But you went by Shaw to avoid problems?
Potential problems, but I got embarrassed of it. I thought about it. It was almost like I'm trying to hide my Jewishness, and I said, mm-hmm. It's not right. You know, Schwartz is who I am, and so I went to it.
And I have no doubt New York embraced that.
They seem to. Yeah.
Well, you had a good run there. It was very interesting. I want to talk about chapter one of the book. And again, we could go for a real long time on this, but you landed an interview with David Berkowitz, the son of Sam Killer. Now, this interview took place 25 years after his crimes in New York City. Why was he news a quarter century later?
His parole was coming up. By law, you're eligible for parole in New York State after 25 years of incarceration. Of course, there was no chance Berkowitz was ever going to get out on parole. He killed 7 people, shot 13. But he had made it known that he knew he did not deserve parole. So my producer went up to the prison, met with him, and then I became pen pals, if you will, with him. And he wanted to know what I was about and what the questions were going to be. And I wouldn't tell him the questions, but I'd let him speak his piece. I didn't want to make it a pity party for him, so I interviewed relatives of those he killed, the father of Donna Loria, the first victim. I interviewed the police officer who arrested him. He said he wanted to talk, to let people know he doesn't deserve to be out. So that's why he did the interview. It was the first interview he had given in a while in an upstate New York prison.
You use the term in the book, and a lot of us are familiar with it. It's called the get, which means you landed somebody who might be hard to get or is rarely interviewed. He was a good get.
Yeah, he was, because he hadn't talked in a while. And people were always drawn to him just because of the horrible nature of his crimes. And there were all kinds of speculation about a cult and whether he acted alone or not. And I did ask him every question I wanted to ask him. He said he was in a drug-induced haze at the time, and he didn't even remember it, and he didn't want to talk about it, but I pressed him, you know, about this dog. You know, the son of Sam was a neighbor's dog, and, you know, the neighbor was named Sam, but by all accounts, he acted alone, despite the recent Netflix documentary about a journalist who, you know, kept espousing the theory that there were other people involved, but not one witness ever saw another person. I'm convinced he acted alone, and so were the police.
Now, certainly this was not presented as a 90-second news broadcast. How did this go on the air?
Well, it was one of the longest pieces I've ever done. It was about 8.5. It was, I think, 8 minutes and 4 seconds to be exact, at the top of the newscast. And at the bottom of the newscast, they ran another 3 minutes of just sound of Berkowitz answering some questions that weren't used at the top of the hour. So it was a long, that's extraordinarily long for TV news, and it got a lot of play in the New York market.
So there was an unsettling incident in the reporting and putting together of that report that frankly does not speak well of TV news ethics, and you lay it out in your book, which I must congratulate you for. Tell us that story.
When I came back from the prison with the raw footage of the interview with Berkowitz, the three news managers wanted to see it, and the top one, the news director, told me to lie to make it more sensational. He saw my pen that was sitting between Berkowitz and myself on the table in the prison interview room, and he said, "Why don't you say you were afraid that Berkowitz was going to pick up your pen and stab you with it?" And I said, "Because I wasn't. It never entered my mind." This is 25 years later. He was born again. He was a model inmate, according to all the officials there. They called him a teddy bear. And I said, "I never thought about that. Why should I write that?" So that started my downfall at the station, by the way. Mm-hmm. And this was a new news director. And I came back 2 days later with the script. And, of course, I left that line out of it. And he put in the line, "My producer was nervous that Berkowitz was going to pick up my pen and stab me with it." Well, Dan, my producer, wasn't at the interview. He was off that day. He wasn't even in the newsroom. So that soured me. It, you know, people might say, "Oh, what's the big deal?" Well, it's a lie. Not true. Sensationalism. Fox had bought the station, and I didn't like the writing. The sensationalism level had increased.
But Matthew, tabloid. You spoke the line on the air, though.
I did, because I couldn't afford to quit. I had a wife and a big mortgage, and yeah, I lied on the air, and I hated it, and I cringe every time I see the piece now. But my option was, I argued it with him again when he said, "Leave it in," and I couldn't afford to quit. That's the truth.
Well, people have quit over lesser things.
I couldn't survive without that. I mean, I
Well, I appreciate your candor.
They were paying me good money. And honestly, you know, I put up what fight I could, but I just could not afford to quit.
Were you surprised?
It came down to that. It came down to getting fired or using that line. And I honestly, with a big mortgage and three kids, but I cringe every time I see the piece now. But I really had no options at the time.
Do you think you would have been fired?
Yes.
For not using that?
Well, as it was, because I even argued when my contract was up, they didn't renew it. The contract was up. That was May of 2002 when the piece aired. My contract was up at the end of the next year. And they didn't renew me. You know?
Were you surprised when he initially introduced the idea of telling a lie on the air?
I thought he was joking.
Did you?
Yeah.
You had never heard of this before in the business or been presented with it yourself?
I've heard of it before, but I had never been told to do it. And I can tell you something else. The two assistants in the interview, in the meeting, when he told me to say that and they saw me argue, nobody stuck up for me or said, that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It shows you kind of how people are, you know, brown nose or afraid of disagreeing with the boss. I would have appreciated a little backup there.
I think what I found refreshing about the mention of this in your book is that in this era of fake news, and we're under a lot of attack, as you well know, in the news industry, you said, yep, it exists. It exists, at least it did in that interview.
It certainly did. That's the only time in my 10,000 or so stories of my career I knowingly told a lie. But I see stories now that are skewed to the way that management of that particular station wants it. I see that all the time.
And as you said, this was the beginning of the downfall at that station, which we're going to get to in just a minute. It's a very interesting story. We're going to take a quick break. This is the Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Things Socolow Village studio with our guest Matthew Schwartz. Join us on the live line, made possible by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We'll be back in a minute.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
When the public weighed in on the first draft of the Regional Transportation Authority Plan, the RTA responded by revising the final plan before voter approval in 2006. The RTA is preparing for a new plan for voter consideration by June 2026 and invites your input on regional transportation priorities. A draft plan will be presented for further public review. Submit your input or learn more at rtanext.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
And welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. Since 1970, Green Things has been the go-to place for your gardening needs. Green Things is on a lovely 13-acre site that is also home to Socolo Village and all of their fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things on River Road, just west of Brandy Fenton Park, and on the web at greenthingsaz.com and socolovillage.com. We are talking to Matthew Schwartz, a recently retired TV investigative reporter. You might remember him from KVOA Channel 4 here in Tucson, but the career spanned 44 years, and he has written a book. It's called Confessions of an Investigative Reporter. You have a couple of book signings coming up.
I do. They were actually originally scheduled at the beginning of the pandemic, but Barnes & Noble has asked me to come back, and I'll be at the Barnes & Noble East Side store on East Broadway September 11th from 1 to 4. That's the East Side store, September 11th from 1 to 4. And then at the Foothills Barnes & Noble, the West Side store, September 25th, also from 1 to 4. So I hope some folks will come out and say hello, and we'll do Q&A. We'll do whatever they want, really. Maybe a little reading, signing, and really love to meet some folks.
Very good. You know, one hilarious part of your book, it addresses the importance of how a reporter, a TV reporter, looks. You state flat out, and I quote, "Appearances matter in television news." Now, talk about words that never need to be spoken. You had a toupee at one point. You were fighting the Battle of the Bulge, and you were refusing to sensationalize and lie on camera. We just went through that. And you say that that kind of helped end your career in New York.
Well, the fact that I even argued with my boss about putting a lie in the story, I'm sure led to my downfall. I'm sure he thought I was too old school.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And then I did wear a hairpiece for a little while, and I said, this is ridiculous. I threw the thing in the trash. Yeah, and I fought a weight battle on and off during my career. You know, appearances matter, and I guess the management, if two people are just, you know, are equal for a job, they'll take the person they think is more attractive. And there's the old argument that, you know, well, viewers will say if a person can't take care of him or herself, maybe they're less credible. I don't necessarily agree with that, but it's just a fact of life.
You know, we always say that print people are ugly and we talk too much. This is why we don't do TV news. But it is true that you look at a lot of TV news, not just local, and you see the stereotypical bubble-headed bleach blondes. And I will tell you that I don't care what anybody looks like, but as long as they can report the news. And I'm seeing some that aren't really, you can tell they were hired for the wrong reasons. Does that happen?
I think it happens more frequently. You know, it used to be when I was coming up through the ranks in the late 70s, you have to work four jobs, at least three, to get to a major market. Now they're taking younger reporters, thus less experienced, hence not as good in many cases, not all. And that's because they pay less, because the big money-making days of TV are over. You know, it was in the 80s and 90s, and that's because they have to share the pie, you know, with hundreds of stations and streaming outlets, whereas in the old days, when I was a kid, there were five stations. Okay, so now there's the pie, it's smaller. And
right.
Don't get me wrong, TV stations still make money hand over fist.
Sure.
But they not as much as they used to make. They don't spend as much. And so less experienced reporters are getting on the air in bigger markets. I'm amazed sometimes when I see these kids in major markets and on the networks. Now listen, some of them are really good. So much of it now is the internet and being in tune with everything digital. Putting your stories on the internet even before, on your website, the station's website, before it's even on the air.
You know, I was thinking, your book had me thinking quite a bit, and I came to the conclusion that as a print guy, when I put together, I'm putting together a report, you are putting together a show. And a show has to have some surprises, has to evoke emotion. Generally, there's a bad guy. Is that an accurate assessment or is that unfair?
I think it's an accurate assessment of investigative reporting for the most part. Yeah.
But a news report doesn't have to have all that in it. But
no.
You say a lot of times, you know, you're kind of looking for the images or that good piece of video or whatever. And a good piece of video doesn't necessarily mean it's good reporting. But what's the win here? Is it getting viewers and getting ratings, or is it actually telling an accurate, relevant story?
The latter. But I think if you tell it in a compelling way, that will bring the viewers. You know, it's the old story of like a baseball team, let's say. You know, what comes first, what's before the card. If you win, you'll get, you know, like that saying was Field of Dreams. They just had the Field of Dreams. You know, if you build it, they'll come. If you win, fans will come. And I think if you do on a consistent basis, solid news pieces, it has to have a hook to pull them in. But you don't be sensational. All you do is solid journalism. And I think if you write in a compelling way and investigative reporting, yes, if you do shine the light on bad guys, people will watch. There's no way you can be inaccurate or not credible in any sense.
But there was some sensationalism because you spend an awful lot of time jumping out of the bushes, pushing a microphone in somebody's face.
I did. You know, my thoughts on that are, first you ask as a gentleman the person to do an interview. The problem is none of these guys who knew they were doing wrong and ripping off consumers in many of my stories, they're not going to agree to a sit-down interview. So there's no other way I could get them. And I think I needed to show their faces on TV to the public so they stop ripping off people. It's just not as effective, Dan, as if I said, oh, we called him and he didn't agree to an interview, or he hung up on me, which sometimes I had to do if they were, say, not in town and I wasn't able to travel to get them. KBOA sent me once to San Diego to get a con artist who, I like to think, thanks to our reporting, ended up with her going to prison. She was ripping off a lot of Tucsonans.
Well, you're saying, you know, people who are ripping off others, but in print journalism, we're being very careful not to convict people. But here you are, judge, jury, and executioner, and you throw the camera in someone's face, and you're used to being on the air. I've been on the air a few times, and it's not so disconcerting. But for a lot of these people, it's kind of a stunning moment.
We weighed that responsibility very heavily. I can't tell you how many stories I didn't do when I got complaints, say, about a business because the business had a good record. A couple people were upset. They had, you know, a large volume of business. I said, you know what? I don't want to ruin their reputation, even though I know they did bad by that customer. There'd have to be a high volume. But we considered heavily whether or not it was worth, as you say, jumping out of the bushes, you know, to ambush somebody. I mean, we had to have overwhelming evidence that they did this. Yes, we are in a way the judge. That's right. But you know, if they're innocent, let them provide proof for me. And you know, we would re-edit things if somebody say they didn't want to do an interview, and then I, you know, ambush them, and then they showed me some kind of proof. Well, we wouldn't use the ambush. You know what I mean? But I would say 9 times out of 10, the people we ambushed were guilty of doing these things.
So they had an opportunity.
And they didn't want to talk. How many innocent people do you see don't return calls, don't have their lawyer return calls, and then run and hide from you if they're not guilty?
Unfortunately, we are running way short on time, but I want to point out a couple of stories. The Greyhound dog track story out of Tucson, very interesting work. A drug doctor in Florida, also very important. I got about 15 seconds here for you, but I want you to answer one question. You're a 20-year-old college student thinking of getting into the business. How would it be different today than it was 45 years ago?
They'd have to be very, very informed and educated on everything digital.
Okay. And that's, I think, would be the same for us. So our thanks to Matthew Schwartz. And again, I wish I had so much more time. Get his book, Confessions of an Investigative Reporter. Very interesting reading. He's going to be doing a couple of book signings coming up. Our thanks to you. You're an interesting man, and I'm sure our listeners would enjoy your book. Where can they get it, by the way, just real quick?
MatthewSchwartzBook.com or online at wherever books are sold, as they sell, say, Amazon and Barnes & Noble. I hope to see some folks out there at the Barnes & Noble East Side on the 11th from 1 to 4 and on the 25th at the Foothill Store also from 1 to 4.
Great. And I'm going to be back in this seat on Friday as we welcome Sarita Mayor Tom Murphy. Always a lot going on down there. On behalf of our team here at the Buckmaster Show, you make it a great Monday.